You're listening to Michelle Redfern and Mel Butcher on Lead to Soar, bringing you the best leadership advice and mentorship from around the world. Learn more at leadtosoar.com.
Welcome, everyone, to Lead to Soar. I am delighted to be joined today by my partner, Michelle Redfern, but also a wonderful guest, Gloria Tabby. Gloria, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mel. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's absolutely our pleasure. So this is your first time on the show. I wonder if you might just give us a bit of an introduction about who you are, your background.
Sure. So I am Gloria Tabby, founder of a platform called Everyday Inclusion. And I founded this platform after years of experiencing racism combined with sexism in the workplace. And I actually just got fed up. And so I, instead of, I guess, protesting in a vacuum, I decided to use those experiences to craft some sort of leadership tool that will help leaders to understand the disconnect between their policies on inclusion and diversity, but then what actually happens on the ground for marginalized people or underprivileged women like myself. And so that's how Everyday Inclusion came about. I work with leaders to skill them up, to understand the issues that people like myself face and what to do about it.
Okay. And that really takes us into where I wanted to start. So first, can you help us understand what is marginalization? And then I've got a follow-up for that.
It's a big question. It would take quite some time to really get into how marginalizations come about and then how it's manifested in the workplaces for people like myself. So we can't deny that the world is structured in a way that it has hierarchy. There's people on the top and people at the bottom. Now, we don't like it, but that's how the world is created. And because of that, it doesn't matter what those people that this hierarchy has placed them on the bottom, whether they are highly educated, highly qualified, with talent. Because of this illusional structure, it really affects them being able to get through the system and rise into leadership. So this illusional structure just keeps squashing them no matter what they do. And often you hear things like, you know, if you work hard enough and smart enough, you can be successful just like everyone else. I mean, that is half true. Because those people that I've just described, it doesn't matter how hard they work, they can't get through the leadership. And so here we are, we want a diverse, inclusive organizations, but there's a whole lot of people that this system keeps squashing them, so they can't get through. And so that's the issue that we're dealing with, and that's how marginalization works for people like myself. And it's frustrating because I've been in organizations where I am, and I'm not just saying this, the highly qualified person. I don't think I've actually, and this is why I got fed up to start my own business. I can't remember being in an organization where the manager was actually more educated than I am. And so that's a good example. And so because I'm a Black woman, those two combined, it places me in a position that no matter how hard I work, I'm still marginalized. And this is what we need to understand about race. We are very good about dealing with gender. Guess what? Because for years, we've spent money and investment in learning about gender construction in society. So we've come to understand gender and the issues that that bring to us in leadership. We have language around it. And because we understand it, we can then put reforms that are concrete and real. So right now in Australia, we have things like parental leave And anyone who's qualified for parental leave is now going to be qualified for superannuation payment. Now, that's going to be a huge difference to parents that decide to take time to be with their newborn. We have language around gender equality because we've invested to understanding the problem. When it comes to race, we haven't done that. We've shoved it right at the bottom. We don't talk about it. We don't understand it. We don't have language around it. So we can't actually deal with the problem. And this is what we are facing with.
Gloria, listeners, I'm nodding away madly listening to Gloria. And one of the things that I hope people will realize that Mel and I talk about, and given that we're two white women on a podcast, is we will talk about workplace gender equality, the leadership actions that's required to advance all women. And we talk about intersectionality. And still, intersectionality is not well understood. And I'm painting with a very broad brush here, obviously. But there are people who don't understand that at the very center of everything is power. And when you have power, you have choice. And people who have a range of different identities. So as you've said, Gloria, you're a woman and you're a black woman. So that gets you further away from power, therefore further away from choice, irrespective of how hard you've worked. And in the very heart of it, marginalisation, you know, in my head, I've got this visual of at the margins, you know, the margins are at the edge of the paper and the person's on the edge of the paper. So that's, you know, folks, it's such a, I am very visual. So that marginalisation means I'm at the edges. I'm not able to get into the centre where the power is. Irrespective of how hard I work, how qualified I am. And of course, you are highly educated, Gloria. So I am a white leader. How might I start paying more attention to marginalisation of people in my workplace? And in particular, people who have multiplying elements to their marginalisation, i.e. women of colour. And then I want to talk about the language about race, particularly in Australia. I mean, there's quite some significant difference between US and Australia, as we talked about off there. But if I'm a white leader, what can I do right now to start paying attention and then taking action about black women or women of colour who are marginalised in my workplace?
That is a great question, Michelle. Thanks for that, because that's actually the basis of my work. So as a leader, to be aware of those on the margins is really crucial. We can cast our mind back onto gender. What have we done to upskill ourselves as leaders to understanding gender issues? So we can start there. We have respect at work. We have a whole range of initiatives that skills us to understanding the gender problems. And so I often refer to gender because social categorization are gender, race, disability, sexuality, age, and a whole range of categories. And those categories are not something that we can change because that's what forms how society functions. And so in order as a leader to actually pay attention to that, those on the margins, you need to be aware of what are the issues. And for my work, I start my diversity, equity, and inclusion leadership by training people and upskilling them understanding racism. That's the first thing I do. We need to understand what causes them to be on the margins before we can actually help them. There's no other way. There's no 10 strategies that I can check a box and deal with it. We need to understand the problem in order to be effective in actually having solutions to deal with it. But what we tend to do, leaders, is that we just want to get into strategies straight away. No. We need to actually understand the problem first.
Or go to unconscious bias training.
Please don't do that.
No. Listeners, you won't have seen me give myself an eyeball strain by rolling my eyes back because I've been extremely vocal. Unconscious bias training doesn't work.
Can I suggest something that will help instead of unconscious bias? It's understanding racism. Now, you mentioned something really critical when you asked me that question, those on the margin. So obviously, it's not just people that are category by race are on the margin. I mean, LGBTQ groups are also on the margins. People with disability are also on the margins. So why is it that my business, Everyday Inclusion, centers race and use race as my lens? And I'm not being facetious saying this over and over. The reason why focusing on race is so important, if there's anything that you will get from this conversation with me, the reason why you center race is that research tells us that race is the strongest category of all the differences that we've spoken about. So if we center the most marginalized person, so a Black woman, a Black person who is a woman who has disability, who is also part of LGBTIQ plus group, who is has age, if you center the most marginalized person, everyone else on the margins is going to be benefit. And so that's why my lens is always on race, because they are the most marginalized group of all the differences that we've talked about. And so that helps us to reach our goal faster by focusing on the most marginalized person, because the skills that we develop by understanding racism, race, and how it comes about, how it marginalizes people, it gives us the most excellent skills to deal with people with disability, to deal with family in LGBTQI plus groups, to deal with ageism, to deal with a whole host of marginalization in our society. And so that's why I focus on that.
Gloria, some time ago, I remember it was in the pandemic, you very kindly interviewed me for your podcast and as part of your movement called Voice Everyday Racism. And for me, it was, I just thought that this is such a good thing as a white person to be invited into your space to learn more and to really understand what I could do more to be an ally. And I think I recall saying to you at the time, when if you tell me and I'm an ally, telling me everyone else that I'm an ally doesn't mean I'm an ally. And one of your quotes is, we can't deal with an issue that we can't talk about. Why don't we talk about, oh God, this is just, it's such a self-evident question, but why don't we talk about race and racism? And if we were to center the most marginalized people looking through a lens of race in our organizations, what does that look like? What are the tangible actions? So number one, why don't we talk about it? Why are we so uncomfortable talking about the color of people's skin, their cultural heritage? Where did you come from? Why are we so uncomfortable with that?
It's historical. We don't talk about race because the most powerful people in our society see that those people on those margins are not as important. It's simple.
So this is the power difference, isn't it? It's people at the center of the power circle. And there's a beautiful graphic that I've pulled out of some work by Kimberly Crenshaw, who, of course, coined the term and all of the research around intersectionality some decades ago. But there's this beautiful thing where you've got power at the center and all of those identities. But so those people in the center, if you think about a circle, leaders, at the very center is a lovely big red power circle, a big power button. So if I'm in there, I've got power. Those people, their identity is predominantly white, male, able-bodied, straight, i.e. not homosexual or part of the rainbow community, and probably of a certain age. And I'm vaguer on that because I think there's ageism at all levels. But so that's the people in power. So if they tell us that it's not important, it doesn't get discussed. Or if they tell us it's not polite, it doesn't get discussed. So is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what is happening. And that picture that you've just given us, those people also are saying gender is important. And so then we talk about gender, isn't it? There's gender everywhere. And so, yes, the decision makers are the ones that chart the course of our society. They're the power brokers, not those on the margins. We want to talk about it so you understand what we are going through so that you can do something about it. And so that quote that you said, you can't fix something that you can't talk about, is exactly right. If we don't talk about it, well, it didn't happen. We don't know about it. And so we would keep marginalizing you. But if we say no and we talk about it and we bring it into people's attention, of course we are going to learn about the problem. And of course we are going to come up with cleverer solutions like we have done with gender.
So the second part of my question is, how do we start talking about it as leaders and paying attention? Then I am going to be quiet, Mel.
Well, what we are doing now, we are talking about it. We are raising attention. I often post a lot about it. I use a lot of my life as examples. And that's how we are going to get the momentum. I mean, we don't need for a black man to be killed on the streets before we talk about it. And then the consciousness is all up and running and then it dies out. We don't need to wait till someone is killed violently for us to talk about it. And it had a life expiry day for about 2 years and then it's gone dead. And when it happened, we thought that was going to be, and I'm talking about the killing of George Floyd on the street of the United States. And so that public support at that time was really lovely to see. What happened was that it quickly died out. So it was the talking about it and bringing it into people's consciousness was what was going to help us to move us into action. When we look at gender problems, Black women have been at the front of gender equality from day one. And we always said, when you are asking for gender equality, think about us too and look at race so that racism and gender can both be solved. But the thing that a white woman did was continue to place their needs in front of us constantly. So they placed their need right in front of us and completely ignore our need to be seen and heard as human being. So this is the issue that we face. So I can also tell you that even diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative that do not tackle racism is not really making any support for those that aren't white. And so even there, that program, there's division. I mean, I live in Australia and most of my work is through white women. White women get the biggest contract with the biggest corporation in Australia, and then they contract to me, even though I'm highly skilled and more qualified to get those ticket jobs. Organizations do not deal with me directly because of both my gender and my race. It's shocking, isn't it?
It's shocking, but unsurprising to me because I have experienced that. And to diverge slightly, yes, I'm a white woman and I'm a DEI practitioner and I'm very successful. And yes, I do have big corporate contracts, but I'd like to think, I know that I, you know, when people say to me, I'd like you to do something on race, I go, you know what, or on First Nations, I go, I'm happy to put you in touch with the right person, but I don't have that lived experience. I can give you a holistic view of all of the, you know, intersectionalities, et cetera. But we really need to bring experts in here with lived experience. So I can't give you the lived experience of a trans woman, a Black woman, a First Nations woman, a disabled woman. What I can give you is lived experience of a white woman who's older and gay. And I have lots of expertise around the systems and the processes and what have you. But we've got to start talking. And I think leaders, there's a call to action. We want to start a conversation about race in our workplaces, get an expert to coach you, whether it's one-on-one or one-to-many. That is a very good first start. And I think the other thing is learn. Learn what, there are many, many places now that you can learn about everyday sexism, everyday casual sexism, gender inequality, gender inequity. I'm going to have to follow my social media feeds to figure that out. But how about we start looking at everyday racism? And that's why I loved your give a voice to everyday racism. What does it look like? So I can understand, oh, I think I've done that. Now I need to be better. So Mel, you were going to jump in there.
Well, I want to bring up an example that is a bit extreme, but it just happened. And you two may not have seen the headlines yet. So we're recording this when it's Australia's morning and it's coming into my evening. But I've been seeing a bunch of posts on a CEO named Frank Hester in the UK who made extremely violent remarks about a member of parliament who is a Black woman in the UK. And I don't even want to repeat his remarks, but it's everyday racism. And if we just think about turning that around, turning that upside down, if a Black woman like her were to make a comment like that, a comment that has so much violence in it about a white person, the reaction of the community would be swift and severe. And yet we have not seen the board of this software company, TPP, or whoever else they're associated with, come out and condemn this the way that they should and make appropriate amends for their failure to create a safe environment for their employees.
I really want to emphasize, because I was actually reading it this morning, my first download of all of the news articles and what have you. And what I want to emphasize here, Mel and Gloria, well, listeners, this man is white. He's a man. He's affluent. He's extremely rich and he's powerful. He is at the center of that diagram, that he has power. And with his power and his platform of influence, he has said, you must hate this person because of her identity and all like her.
Yeah. And so it's almost like lighting, putting petrol and the lighting and then just going wild. A powerful, powerful white man to be able to say that about a Black woman. So that's what we are dealing with. That's what we are dealing with. We have been able to curtail that kind of behavior towards women, well, white women, over the years. What we haven't done in the gender narrative is to also look behind and look at the other women that are being left behind with this rhetoric. It's actually quite violent the way gender equality is going. And it's run by the most powerful, powerful white women leading the charts. I mean, nobody now would question the importance of gender equality in workplaces. What we haven't done is to look at other women that are being left behind because of that. And so this comment that you've just shared with us, Mel, is shocking, but it's not so shocking to me because structurally, we have not invested in understanding what racial abuse is actually is about and how much it harms Black and people of color. We haven't done it. And so that's why someone in a high position like this man that you've described can lash out a comment like that. And the impact that will have is not now, but generation to come. And we need to stop. But have we had that public support in denouncing it? That's another question. Why isn't it being denounced? Because those women are not in a frame of mind when we talk about gender equality and respect in the workplaces. Okay. And so for me, talking about this, I have got ramification in Australia because it's almost like gender equality is gaining so much attraction and support. Anything critique against it, you become the problem. So I'm the problem by actually saying, hey, there's a whole group of women that we are not catered, that you need to also have conversations about it with us. And so you will find that then what will happen is you are shut out. And so, yes, I don't get the high ticket contracts because of that, but I haven't actually done anything wrong. All I'm doing is to highlighting a problem that we are not actually dealing with. And so it's huge in Australia. You think you have problem in US? Australia, we don't even talk about it.
Well, and I have to imagine that Australia is like the US in that in most companies, HR is led and or dominated by white women. And we have to acknowledge that they control power there. And it's also, it doesn't matter that your HR person is a woman, that person can never fully understand how a Black person or a person of color can feel unsafe in a work environment, and how the, like the comments from the CEO affect more people than even just the people that work in his company.
I just want to add to this and particularly bring a sharp focus onto Australia. A little while back, in a fit of outrage, because I just hover around outrage and advocacy every single day, I was looking at some articles around the latest appointment to boards, and there's a particular organisation in Australia that is very powerful for women. And I just looked, and I thought, they're all white women. And I can't comment on all of their sexuality, but, you know, there's pretty strong case that it was cisgendered, straight, white women in power. So I put a post up on LinkedIn across all my socials that said, are we creating an old white girls club to replace the old white boys club? Holy shit. You should have seen the reaction it got from women. And there was a bit of look, I just stepped back and thought, I'm just going to let the discussion play out here because there's some terrific advocates. But I went, okay, so that hit a nerve. And, you know, the old saying, well, if the cap fits, wear it kind of thing. But it was very, very interesting. And let's face it, I could say it because I've got power. I'm a white woman. So I can shine a torch on my own people, right? And the other thing is, I say, leaders who are listening, to take a stand. If you're fearful, that's okay, because courage is not the absence of fear. I am fearful, not as fearful as Gloria is. I am fearful sometimes because I do think if I make a stand and I'm very, very vocal about my values and my principles, I think, oh, well, that means I'm not going to get some work. It is as simple as that. But you know what? It doesn't. It means more. There's less likelihood or more likelihood of you not getting work, Gloria, for shining a light. So what am I trying to say here, leaders? Pay attention. Pay attention to who's in power and say, I wonder why people like Gloria and others, why are they on the margins? And start asking questions. As I always say, curiosity is an attribute that is a game changer. So that was a bit of grandstanding. I'm sorry, Mel, but we cannot replace the old white boys club with an old white girls club. It's as simple as that. So leaders in your organization, start looking at all of the, when I make decisions about talent, am I actively seeking out people who are likely to be on the margins, despite their education and their hard work, simply because of the way they look or their cultural background? That's it. Just run that lens over it. Over to you, Mel.
I would just add to that that leaders of organizations need to apply that thinking to how they're developing talent. It's not just the group of people that you recruit or the group of people that you consider for advancement, but it's about being super deliberate about how you're providing the pathway for growth and learning and the sponsorship for advancement for people who are on the margins. So yeah, let me leave it there. Gloria, I want to ask you, how would you say it looks for an organization to have DEI in their DNA?
Well, I haven't come across one in Australia. In my book, I talk about really large organizations that for the purposes of marketing, I won't mention who they are, but it's in the book and it's like a case study of 10 large corporations around the world who, right from the start, the world go, they decided that DEI was going to be part of their company structure, the DNA of their company. And so they will have all the foundation and the framework right from the start. And they're huge and very successful. So it can be done. And those companies have done really well. They had some of them racial lens as well. And so it actually makes your organization actually more successful when you do it that way. And this organization I describe in the book, like they are like the top tier organizations in the world. And they understand that race is an issue. So they deal with it right from the start. And it has become the way that they do business. And they are also not afraid to come in public to support racial equity initiative publicly. And so they also have public support.
I think that's a really important point. I'm always like to pull out the call to action. Visible, vocal support. Leadership casts a long shadow. So I can't emphasize enough, monkey see, monkey do. It's a dreadful expression. But, you know, when the boss does something, they go, oh, that must be the way things are done around here. So if I'm standing up, remember the power, I'm at the center of the power dynamic. When I stand up and say, it is important that Black people, First Nations people, people of color, the people on the margins are no longer on the margins in our organization. And here's what I'm going to do about it. And your quote in your book, which I love, is create a succinct and actionable diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy that is attractive to all stakeholders, including millennials. The words there, yes, strategy. And I was with a group of people last week talking about strategic talent management with the DEI lens. I said, I've seen some beautiful strategies in my time, business strategies, DEI strategies. I've seen less beautiful implementations. Actionable. So number one, actionable. We've got to be able to do this, but attractive to all stakeholders. And part of that is saying, which stakeholders are going to rebel? Which are going to actually revel? Which are going to love this? And what do we do about that? Stakeholder management 101. So there you go. That's what people have got to do, right? Visible, vocal, but actionable stuff.
I'm happy to share these really quick strategies that a lot of your leaders listening can adapt straight away. I call it the three A's. So the three A's, number one is assessment. Have a good scan of your organization and assess where you are at, because you just need to start where you are at before you can do anything. So that's number one. You look at where are my recruitment pipeline? Who am I recruiting? Who are training my new staff? What's involved in the employee experience when they first come on board? So onboarding. Is race equity part of my onboarding strategies? So that's one, this assessment. Number two is announcement. And Michelle, you alluded us to that before. As a leader, you have power, you're in the middle. What you say is important. If equity and bringing those on the margin and upskilling them and helping them out, you're already in your organization. They have a lot to give. Remember, because we are so marginalized, we have to develop extra resilience to survive. And those skills can be utilized within your organization. So use them. And so make announcement and put your support behind that kind of initiative. So that's number two, assessment. Number one, announcement and action, real action. Put into place exactly what you're going to do from point A to B, how you're going to achieve that. And if you need support in understanding how marginalization comes about, seek experienced people to help you out. I often say lived experience is the number one place, but lived experience alone has to be used with caution. Lived experience alone is not enough to have clever tools to actually deal with the issues. Of course, we need to understand the problem through lived experience because they live it and they'll be able to highlight so that you can see. If you can have someone with lived experience but also have training on marginalization, then you actually have got, and that's what we do at Everyday Inclusion. I myself have been on the margins, but I've also taken time to study or marginalization is and how it comes about, how it's manifested within organizations, then those people can also help you develop the right tools to overcome the problem that you're trying to solve. So those are the three: assessment, announcement, and action that you can implement straight away.
As a fan of alliteration and threes, I'm totally down with that. So thanks. Great actions. Great actions. Mel, what do we want from your perspective? Now, where am I going here? I'm in my 50s. Mel, you're in your 30s. And I'm pulling on that thread of the final piece of your call to action there was engage millennials. Mel, give us a perspective of a young person. You're closer to the Zs and the Zs and the millennials. You are a millennial. But there's, you know, I'm a Gen X. There's just a different expectation from people newer to the workforce than me these days about what they expect from leaders and organizations, right? So, and I don't, this is me going, Mel, you're the one, not me. So what would you be looking for? Because I want leaders to hear a different perspective from a different age group about why this is important. And then Gloria can respond.
Okay. What would I be looking for? Well, I can point to a simple one, but also something that I know Black women in my network also do, which is if we're considering going to work for some company, we will go and look at who the leadership team is. What do they look like? And hiding their photos is not going to get you as far as you would think. We will find out who the leadership is, and we'll make our assessment about whether or not this is a good place for us to go based on that, not based on some stock photos you're using on your website. So that's a sort of blunt force one. But younger generations, and I don't know that I'd necessarily include myself in this, but people have gotten incredibly savvy with digital tools, and younger generations are not going to tolerate and be quiet about when they're treated poorly. They're going to share that information with other people. And I think the other thing I'd like to say here that just does not get enough attention, especially with technical companies run by technical people, the way that you treat employees while they're in a recruiting process, when they're an applicant to your company, the way you treat them while they're at your company, and the way you treat them when they're headed out the door, all of that is part of your brand. It's part of your company's brand. Your reputation is on the line for all of these things. And it's just so much easier now for people in a community, people in a certain industry, to share what's going on. So I don't want to be here saying something super angry to our listeners, because I think that if someone's listening to our show, they're pretty progressive, right? They want to learn and they're interested in improving. So I'd love to help us get to a wrap-up here point with you, Gloria, and just have you share maybe from your perspective some tips. So one of the things from your book was incorporating regular check-ins into practice to ensure that inclusion and social responsibility changes are really taking place within the company. I love this. We've talked about the idea of like stay interviews. I think this is quite similar. So why don't you tell us about how you would design those, how you want to see companies use those types of discussions?
That's a good wrap-up question. I think inclusion is something that it needs to be defined by each leader, each company, with your leadership team. So when I do training within organization, I often get all the leaders within the different departments rather than training staff. So I better make a point that inclusion is a leadership issue, not employee issue. And so we need to get that term right. It's something that leadership do, just like you would do with your financial status within the company. Your financials is a leadership problem, Well, inclusion is also a leadership problem, and you need to tackle it the same way. But what I see is people will just, oh, let's have inclusion training and all the staff get the training. But then how do you ensure that it's reinforcing that within the organization? That's why it starts with leaders. Leaders need to come up with the knowledge that that's actually something they want to do as a brand. And you've just explained to us, your age group will look at the company and look at who's on the board and things like that. So if inclusion is a leadership problem, how are you going to articulate it throughout the organization? And those three A's that I've given you, you can use that to actually operationalize it throughout the organization. Assessment, announcement, and action. And then once you action it, you need to also have a process of evaluation, going back and checking that things are in place. So you can see that it's a strategy that is woven through the organization, not a one-off training. It's not a destination that you get to. It's a process that gets interwoven throughout the organization. And that's the approach I'll use.
I totally agree. And certainly one of my major, most favorite clients, we're now into year 4-5 of the roadmap, the never-ending roadmap, and that is accepted. And we're at that operationalize. And it's the DNA, build this into our DNA. So I heartily agree, Gloria. Hey, Gloria, where can people find you so that you can do work for them in voicing everyday racism and building inclusive cultures?
Sure. So Gloria Tabby, Everyday Inclusion. So www.everydayinclusion.com.au. You'll find me there. I'm quite active on LinkedIn as well.
I heartily recommend a follow. Very educational.
It's great to be here. Thanks so much for asking me to chat to me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
No, well, it's our pleasure. Gloria, I respect you for the work that you do in a pretty harsh and often hostile environment. I hope you know that Mel and I are walking beside you. And as we walk beside you, we learn from you, but we know that it's our responsibility as leaders to educate ourselves as well. But we thank you for your time in helping us to educate our members and our listeners about what it takes to be a 21st century leader, which means your diversity, equity, and inclusion skills are no longer a nice to have, they are a must have. So again, always thank you from me to you for you're being the change that you want to see in the world. Mel, over to you to bring us home.
Oh yeah, thanks Gloria so much. And you gave us this wonderful nugget at the end, inclusion is a leadership issue, not an employee issue. So yeah, just thank you again for joining us and being a guest on Lead to Soar.
Beautiful. It's been great to chat to both of you and to meet you properly, Mel.
Oh, thanks, Gloria.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Lead to Soar. We sincerely appreciate your honest, positive reviews. You can leave questions at leadtosoar.com for Michelle and Mel to answer on future episodes. Until next time, we hope you'll use what you've learned here and lead to soar.